You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Thursday, August 20th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Dave Smith, host of the podcast Part of the Problem, who I think is a libertarian and has agreed to debate some broad principles, I guess, of society. Also on the program today, Donald Trump continues to roll on, wreaking havoc amongst the Republican presidential hopefuls and races. New poll, he's up in North Carolina. He's shattering Jeb Bush's dreams, it seems like, and enjoying it. Also on the program, Bernie Sanders to introduce legislation basically banning for-profit prisons, and hints that within the next 45 days will support marijuana legalization. Also on the program today, John Kasich wants to portray himself as a moderate. Sadly, his record tells a different story. And the National Labor Relations Board rejects Northwestern University's football players' application, essentially, for a union. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. So before we get Dave Smith on the phone, let me remind you, this podcast is supported by its members. Even the free show exists, essentially, only because of its members. You can be one of those who support this program on a daily basis. Make it possible, really. George Soros has not returned any of my phone calls in over now 6 or 7 years. And prior to that, I didn't call him. And in fact, I didn't call him at all because I don't have his number. Nevertheless, it is you folks who support this program. Become a member today at Join the Majority Report. On Twitter the other day, and this was a little bit of a, I don't know, I guess a little bit whimsical of me, because generally we wind up for these things a little bit more. But someone tweeted at me that this guy, Dave Smith, was on a podcast was espousing libertarian views, and she suggested I debate Dave. And I don't know Dave, but I saw that he was a comedian. It piqued my interest. I suggested available. He came back very quickly, loved to do it, and so we set this up. I don't know too much about him, but I've listened to a little bit of his podcast and another one he was on, and he sounds quite bright. And that I find even more interesting, because it has been rather rare that we've had both someone who is a libertarian and also quite bright. I don't know that we've ever had that, really. I mean, I guess you could say Professor Walter Block, but I don't know. So we will get to Dave in 1 second. I just also need to just, there are some stories that you really don't even need to read, ladies and gentlemen, to get the gist of it. And I put that to a test right now to you. Tell me if you get the gist of this story by this headline from Media Matters. Gun advocate John Lott was the real author of a viral FoxNews.com op-ed written from perspective of a female stalking victim. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dave Smith. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program the host of the podcast, Part of the Problem, Dave Smith. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Sam? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for doing this. And we sort of threw this together pretty quickly relative to stuff that we do around here. And we had talked about in our brief email exchange about maybe putting aside some of the issues that we would agree on, which I think from what I understand would be issues of largely of speaking of war specifically, and marijuana laws and perhaps policing. But if we come across that, I think that's fine. And broadly to talk about let's see, what do we agree on? Was start with the proposition of good government should be small, or just broadly speaking in that way. Now, let me just ask you, let me just start with this, because I don't want to, I introduced you earlier as a libertarian. I don't want to label you as such if that's not the case, allow you to sort of just introduce yourself to the audience.
Okay, well, thank you. I use the term libertarian, although I think, as we might all agree, there are problems with labels sometimes. So I guess if I'm probably most influenced by kind of the Rothbardian, Murray Rothbard. So I'm kind of like a voluntarist anarchist. I don't really like that term, but because it just kind of conjures up images of like me throwing a Molotov cocktail through like a government building or something. But I would say I'm very... I think I'm very culturally liberal. I mean, I'm a Jew from New York. Sound familiar?
I
was raised by a single parent. I was just in a very liberal environment. So culturally, I had a very liberal background. I was very intrigued by Ron Paul's campaign in 2008, and that got me into really reading about libertarianism. And I've been convinced by a lot of great libertarian thinkers that that's kind of the way to go. I like the non-aggression principle, and I think what I would probably disagree with you about from previous debates I've heard you have with libertarians, is that I think the non-aggression principle is not only works kind of academically as a philosophical idea, but I think it's also very practical and applicable.
So, all right, so that's a good place to start. So do you think that, I mean, let's take it to where the rubber really meets the road. I mean, do you think that taxation as practiced by our government, and I guess really all governments, is problematic?
Well, I don't think problematic is the word. I think it's immoral. So if the system that you're saying is we want to fund program X, okay, no matter how vital program X is, if you say the thing is we want to fund this, and the way we're going to fund this is say give me money or we're going to throw you in a cage where you can be tortured and raped, then yeah, I think that's a horrible way to fund a system.
Okay, so, all right, let me see if I understand what you're saying.
Did you understand, like, problematic? I'm not just saying it's, like, inefficient. I'm saying it's wrong. That's the primary position.
Okay, it's wrong morally. Yes. That's what you're saying. So the idea of taxation is wrong morally to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, but the problem here, just to be a little bit more specific, it's more the throwing someone in jail for not paying their taxes is what's really morally wrong to me.
Well, I mean, I don't know that a system of voluntary tax paying is really a tax system at all. So, I mean, I think you've...
I agree with you.
When we talk about throwing somebody into prison if they don't pay their taxes, we're talking about a taxation system.
I just wanted to isolate what my moral problem with it is.
Well, sure. It's that you're forced to pay your taxes.
Yes.
Yeah, and otherwise they wouldn't be taxes. At the end of the day. So, I mean, I think we're in agreement in that respect. So what would be the alternative to funding a government, or do you not believe that there should be government funds?
I don't care what you call it as long as it's voluntarily funded. I really don't care what people do. I know a lot of times it's very easy to laugh off the idea of voluntary kind of funding of these type of programs because, of course, everyone right away goes like, no, I know nobody would voluntarily send in like 50% of their income for the government we have. But truthfully, I mean, I don't know. I look around. When there's a earthquake in Haiti, Americans get on their phone and voluntarily text message over money right away. I think Americans are, by and large, very concerned. How about if just every liberal who I've ever met, how about if the 70 million people who voted for Obama would just, you know, throw a few bucks into basic services? I think we absolutely could fund.
Well, I think that happens now, doesn't it? I mean, everybody in this country pays taxes in one form or another, whether it's payroll taxes or sales taxes or excise taxes or income taxes. So it would take more than that than just the 70 million. I mean, in fact, it would take more than just about everybody in this country throwing 10 bucks in.
Well, hold on. You lost me a little bit there. So the fact that everybody's paying taxes and the fact that it would take more than $10, what's the connection?
Dave, it sounds like to me you're saying that the substitute for a taxation system would be just voluntary contributions. And
So what do we get, like ballpark, do we get in tax revenue, like every year maybe like $2.6
trillion?
Right. I might be a little off on that.
Right. And how would you...
I don't think we would get that voluntarily to just waste on mass murder, mass incarceration, and a lot of the things that we both agree that we don't like. No, I don't think we would get that type of money. I don't think we would be able to have maintained the war in Iraq because it was too unpopular. Like, no, I'm saying, yes, we would... Whatever you want to call it, if we had, like, a voluntary governing system, yes, I think it would be a lot smaller than it is now, but that would be wonderful from my perspective.
And so where is something like this worked? I mean, I understand you can say that they gave, what was it, 50 million, 500 million?
On my mind in the internet, Sam.
What's
that?
That's
where it works. I'm just joking. I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Well, I understand that, you know, there was $500 million or plus probably donated to Haiti. A lot of that actually disappeared. We actually just coincidentally had a ProPublica reporter on a couple of weeks ago to tell us about how that money just disappeared. I mean, how would you, because it was a private charity that was administering it, and there's a lot less oversight, apparently, of those in, let's say, government.
You're saying, but I've also seen lots of data that kind of shows that private charity has waste much less money than governments overall, if you really want to make that comparison. No, look, I'm not saying sending money to Haiti is the perfect
system. Wait, hold on. I can't let that stay. What data, I mean, tell me more about that data, because
Okay, I'm sorry. I probably shouldn't say something like that without having more of it in front of me. But I've just seen before people show that, like, private charities in certainly some third world countries are much more effective at getting, like, aid and food to people than the local governments.
Oh, I would agree. I mean, I would agree. I would much rather, hand some money over, I guess, to, like, an NGO, a trusted NGO working in Somalia, okay, than the
CDC. I just want to make it clear. The point I was making with the thing about Haiti was the idea of voluntarily contributing, not necessarily that texting money to Haiti is like the best, most effective system. So I'm not saying the money. The point I'm making is if that was being done on a local level just for like a safety net or for like, police or some type of police for poor people, that would be much easier to make sure the money isn't wasted. You're not texting it to some crazy government in Haiti. You're texting it, or whatever. You're donating it to your local community.
Well, you grew up in New York, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Because I don't know if you've ever been in like a small town governance anywhere in this country. When you talk about corruption on that level, but I don't think you'd see much by way of local initiatives to help the poor. But be that as it may, my point is that you're saying year to year, we should just rely on what is contributed to I guess theoretically build roads to what else? What things do you think? And I think we can agree that we would both like the military cut. Would you completely disband the military?
I certainly would. Look, the American military, if you want to talk about it, you got to be real about this stuff. And like what we commit mass murder in the Middle East, throughout the Middle East. There are millions and millions and millions of lives ruined because of our military presence. So look, I'm not saying there's not a concern to how we would voluntarily defend this country. But it's like this is the world we're living in now. So, yes, I'd be much, much less concerned about that than what we currently have going on, just to say that. How do you voluntarily, defend the country? Look, the truth is we
– No, I'm not asking you about – No, let me – I'm sorry. I don't think I'm being clear because I agree with you. I mean, our military is grossly oversized and our interventions have been we've literally killed hundreds of thousands of civilians for what I can tell is no reason, or there's obviously reasons.
Yes,
what I'm trying to get to is that you're making a proposal that we don't have a taxation system because you find it morally wrong. Now, I don't want to argue about morals. I'm not sure why that's morally wrong, but
but the throwing someone in jail, let me just push you on that for a second. So you just kind of agreed with me on my principle about the Iraq war.
Right.
So you're telling me if someone stands up and they say, I speak out against the Iraq war, and not only do I speak out against the Iraq war, but I am not going to send my money into Washington to contribute to mass murder. And we're going to take that guy and throw him in a cage, and you don't see the moral issue there?
I actually think that that's civil disobedience, and I think that you have to be prepared to go to prison.
Hold on. Okay,
situation.
I'm sorry. But
yes.
Sam, so you're saying if it's a moral issue, you cannot pay your taxes, and then that's civil disobedience?
Yeah, if you choose not to pay your taxes, then you can expect to go to jail, yes.
Yes, and if a slave ran away from a plantation, he could expect to be brought back to the plantation, but that doesn't make it moral. I'm just arguing you can't acknowledge that that's wrong.
Well, no, because I do think that, look, we live in a society where it is imperfect, but we theoretically, as members of society, we agree to a social contract. Now, if you don't like the social contract in that society, you can go find a better society, one where taxation will work. I mean, this is why I don't want to get into the moral thing. But with that said, yes, you are morally obligated, I believe, to pay your taxes if you want to live in a society and benefit from that society. Now, I've often used the example of my taxes, I don't want them to go to paying for the Iraq war. And the fact is, I just did not have the moral turpitude to refuse to pay taxes and go to prison for it. Like I believe there are people who do specifically for that.
Right.
And I think that is one of the costs of society, that it is a act of civil disobedience. I have total respect for it. When people chain themselves to the front lawn of the White House and they are taken to jail after they have told you must leave here, also an act of civil disobedience. I don't know what that means in terms of, is it moral that taxes are enforced? Yeah, I think that's moral. I do. Let's get on to the practicality of it, because, and I'll tell you why, because I do not think there is another way for society to function but for taxation.
Okay, so there's almost like two separate arguments here. So I just want to make sure there's like, and this is why I tried to say this at first, there's kind of the moral principle, and then there's the like, hey, even if this moral principle is true, if it can't possibly work, then, right, who really cares? Because it'll just ruin society. So I get kind of the point. Now, I just want to respond to, for me, that just seemed like a lot of things. I get some points that you're making in there, but it seemed like a lot of dancing around the pretty obvious immoral thing that I laid out of throwing a guy in a cage to be tortured for not wanting to pay for
that
murder.
I don't think people should be thrown in a cage to be tortured, but I think they should go to jail. I mean, I think that, yes,
I'm not going to, maybe I'm being a little bombastic with rape and torture, but I mean, what they do to you in jail is pretty outrageous, and we probably agree on some of that.
Yes.
But so I just want to say that, I mean, you kind of threw out like a love it or leave it argument in there where you're saying like, oh, well, if you don't like this system of, you threw out the word that we choose to pay taxes, which is my whole argument is that we don't choose. And I thought you conceded earlier that that was force. So my point is that we don't, you know, choose to pay our taxes. That look, there's the love it or leave it model is like, fine, okay, if you don't like slavery, you could go to a country that doesn't have slavery, but you'll still concede it's wrong. So I was just trying to get that concession from you.
Wrong. I think slavery is wrong. I don't think taxation is wrong. I mean, I don't know how to say that more explicitly. I don't think taxation as on principle. You know, are there some taxes I think are bad policy? Are there things that taxes go to pay for that I disagree with? Yes. Do I think some of those things are wrong? Yes. But the idea of being forced to pay your taxes, do I think that's wrong? Absolutely not.
Okay, look, I understand like kind of the assertions that you're making, that you don't think it's wrong to pay taxes and you think taxes are necessary for society and this is kind of like the price of civilization.
Yes.
I don't quite still get, I don't want to just keep repeating ourselves, I still don't quite get how it's not horribly, horribly wrong to throw a man in a cage for standing up for a great principle. But anyway, onto the more practical.
I don't agree that it's a great principle, but okay, so we have agreed to disagree on that. So let's get to the practical part.
Yeah.
How do you replace, and what is the idea? Let's, in the context of America, if the idea is that we're not going to have taxation, right, for whatever reason, because in how do you replace that? I mean, what is it that you get rid of to replace that?
Well, when you say what is it you get rid of, like, I don't exactly understand. Like, I mean, the income tax, you get rid of the taxes. Are you asking, like, what the transition plan? Because I'm just saying, like, to me, the ideal society would be, like, a libertarian anarchy. I'm not saying we can have that tomorrow. I think there has to be, like, a transition.
Oh, I would love to hear about the transition. I'd love to hear what the society you're talking about looks like when we've made that transition.
Okay, it's butterflies and beautiful hippie love and I don't know.
I would include I think, unicorns, look, too, from my perspective, but go ahead.
I think, to me, Ron Paul, in the 2012 election, proposed what I thought was the most reasonable proposal that I had ever heard in terms of a transition, and basically what he said was, you know, we have to immediately, drastically, drastically cut in, like, in the military, in the imprisonment of our own people, like all the real evil stuff, we got to just cut immediately. And then he laid out a detailed plan, but it was basically, I think he took half that money that you cut to pay off the debt, and the other half was to tide over social programs, and then you put dates, you know, off in the future where these programs are going to run out, because I don't know if we have time to even get into this, but
oh,
I know
we do.
You disagree with me on this, but there's $100 trillion of unfunded liabilities. They're all going to run out anyway.
Hold on.
So I think we should start planning
that. Let's talk about unfunded liability, because this is one of the things that I love to debunk. When you say $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities? Because I've heard.
What does the debtclock.org say right now? I'm sorry. Maybe 80 something, 90?
Okay. I mean, because I've heard everything from $72 trillion up to, I think Ted Cruz said the other day, $200 trillion. What is that money? What is that unfunded liabilities?
The unfunded liabilities, well, I think the majority of it, I believe, is Medicare, right? But I think you're talking about, you know, money that the government has taken in for entitlements and now owes to people, that they've basically spent that money.
No. What that money is, when you say unfunded liabilities, is projecting out over a 75-year horizon. The horizon depends on who's saying it. That on what we're going to have to pay out from Medicare or Social Security.
Yeah, is that what I said?
Well, no, wait a second. But the difference is the government has not yet taken in that money because we're not 75 years out. Because you and I, to a lesser degree, I have a feeling you're a little bit younger than I am, we have yet to finish our careers and have yet to finish paying payroll taxes.
Whoa. I know the Sam Cedar show. This is the pinnacle for me. I'm out.
Well, well, in that case, we have a little bit less to count on for your Medicare. But the fact is that the reason why it's unfunded is because those workers who are going to be taken care of by Medicare when they hit 65, hopefully it stays at 65, and in our case, 67 for Social Security, we haven't finished working. We haven't finished paying into the system. And the fact of the matter is, even right now, if we change nothing about how we tax those liabilities, I don't know that they're quite liabilities.
Unfunded liability is something you owe that hasn't been funded. I'm not saying there's no future.
Well, the reason why it hasn't been funded is because we're not there yet. And in fact, those liabilities are not. But Dave, those liabilities aren't paid out tomorrow. Those are liabilities that we're going to accrue over the next 75 years. But what else is going to happen over the next 75 years is that people are going to pay into that system, and you're not counting the other side of the ledger. You're just looking at the liabilities, but you're not looking at the assets, which is the 300 million people in this country who will work for the next 25, 40, 50 years to pay into that system. So, yes, they are liabilities. They are unfunded because we're not in the future yet. And when we're in the future, they will automatically, unless everybody just goes away from America and comes back when they're 65, that's the only way those liabilities are going to be unfunded.
Okay, so let me just make sure I get what you're saying, and I understand the point that you're making about future assets in a sense not being counted in that total liabilities number.
Right, there's
what you're
two
saying. So
columns in that ledger.
I'm sorry?
There's two columns in the ledger: what you're going to owe and what you're going to make. And I can guarantee you that we will make X number of dollars in those funds because unless we all evaporate and just show up when it comes time to retire.
Okay. So, okay, I get the point that you made. So you don't see any demographic problems coming up in the entitlements? You're saying that basically there won't be any unfunded liabilities once people pay in, that we can raise this $100
right
trillion
now,
dollars through taxation?
Right now, if we do nothing different, starting in 2036, because this date has actually gotten further out over the past couple of years, it shrunk. It was down to 2031. Mm-hmm. At 2036, if we do nothing, we will still pay out Social Security benefits to the tune of 80 to 85%. Of what has been promised as of now.
But Social Security isn't nearly as bad as Medicare, right?
And Medicare,
I mean, I understand what you're
Medicare
saying.
Social Security, is you can Medicare is in tougher shape, no doubt. And the bottom line is, I mean, now the numbers have been rejiggered because, frankly, the growth of this stuff has the growth curve has significantly turned down. Let's presume it doesn't stay that way. Yes, I agree with you. We need to raise FICA taxes slightly, but traditionally speaking, FICA taxes, payroll taxes, have been applied to 90% of the income generated in this country, and as of today, it's around 82%.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but there's a lot of other things going on, too. I mean, traditionally speaking, we haven't had a government that spent this much money. We haven't had interest rates at 0%. I mean, why don't we throw in interest rates rising up to, say, anywhere near historic averages in these next 20 years or whatever we're talking about? What happens to all this debt we're servicing then? I mean, do you worry about that at all? Do you worry about, when they see the projections in, 20 years that the interest, goes up to starts overtaking the whole budget? I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, as a percentage of our GDP, our debt is actually around average levels right now. So,
yeah, but you know, the problem with that, Sam, is that the GDP, the number of the GDP, I mean, government spending drives up the GDP, military spending drives up the GDP.
Yes.
So you do all this crazy shit, and then you keep spending more money, and you can go, oh, look,
yeah, but where do you
GDP,
think they spend it? Where do you think they spend it? I mean, I'd prefer it not being spent on the military. But when the government spends money, where do you think they spend it? They don't go to like some special like black hole in the.
You want to know? It's the Bohemian Grove, dude.
Yes,
that's where they spend it all.
All the money they go, they all head out there and take off their clothes and they drop just it in a bucket and it just
and no, lots but, of money floating
see,
around.
Now,
that's what I've heard.
This is actually one of the things that I did hear you talk about on your podcast. The one I listened to was about Bernie Sanders. And I also listened to a little bit of another show you were just on recently. And one thing that did come up that I wanted to that you've just sort of jogged my memory about was this notion of when government spends, and I would prefer they didn't spend it on the military, but the fact is when the government spends money, it doesn't just evaporate. It recirculates in the economy. And,
absolutely. And that's true of the private sector, too.
Yes, of course. And so what is the problem with the government spending? I mean, that it being a driver of GDP, because they're spending it's not like they're spending it in a parallel universe that doesn't implicate my life and your life. It helps the economy.
Sure. Sure. But look, there's just the fact that money is circling around doesn't make an economy work. I mean, you could go to, say, like a third world country tomorrow and be like, okay, I'm going to print $2 trillion and you all have government jobs. Here, that's an economy, right? Just as strong as any economy. Money's flowing around. It's about whether the money's flowing around and producing the maximum amount, whether resources are being allocated properly. So that's the argument against government spending is that it's, I mean, obviously I made the moral argument up front, right? Like it's based on taxation, which we don't agree, but I think is immorally, you know, raised
right,
funds.
Right, right.
But the problem, the efficient problem with spending is that the idea that people, the government doesn't allocate taxpayers' money well. I mean, that's kind of the problem with government spending, that you drain this money out of the economy. You have to take the resources from
but
the
wait
people
a second.
Who are,
what
like,
do you mean drain
themselves.
It out of the economy?
I'm sorry?
We've just agreed. It stays in the economy. What do you mean drain it out?
I'm sorry. I should replace economy with private sector, I should have said.
Okay.
They drain it out of the private sector.
So,
give
me an example of how the private sector allocates money better than the government.
Well, I mean, I think the example of mass war, mass incarceration, that's pretty good. What private company does that?
Well, there's a lot of private companies, actually. Bernie Sanders
Do they compete with the U.S. federal government?
Yes, the government actually contracts it out to them.
But,
so there's private.
Yes, okay, from my perspective, though, that's a government, you know, corporation relationship. I mean, that's like when they give a corporation the power of government without any of the oversight. So I'm not for that. But I'm saying, like, yeah, but no private company without government funding or government, you know, or without, like, a war on drugs, the private prisons can't do any of that shit. That would just be kidnapping.
Okay, so you and I would agree in terms of we want the U.S. government to allocate less resources to the military. I think we would agree on that. But what in the discretionary budget would you take issue with?
Well, look, I mean, I don't like the idea of any of it, man. I don't like the idea of anything forced. Even if you can make the argument that, like, whatever, we can tinker with the age of Social Security, or we can take care of these unfunded liabilities, which I do feel like, you know, I know that one of the things I respect about you is you know your stuff and you can go chapter and verse with this, and you make me kind of want to look into more of that stuff now. But I'm just saying,
that's my agenda.
Government forced. I'm sorry.
That's explicitly my agenda.
That is explicitly what? Your agenda to make me look into stuff more?
Yes.
Well, I'm always doing that. So you've already succeeded in your agenda.
Okay.
But look, I'm still, I mean, I'm 100% convinced still on the disagreement we had in the beginning of the moral issue of imprisoning someone for not wanting to contribute to mass murder. But I'm sorry, back to the problem with even something like Social Security is that it's like coming in and forcefully taking people's wealth to maybe give back to them when they retire. I'm not saying that's not even the better for some people. But how many people out there could have used that wealth in some other way that would have been better? I mean, you just don't know.
Okay, you know, we do have an example, though, because we do know what the situation was before Social Security. In fact, we can also know right now what the situation is even with Social Security. So before Social Security, you had nearly two-thirds of our elderly living in poverty. And it,
so
it,
what year, hold on, what year are you talking about? Like 1935?
Well, yes. Any the year,
okay,
not just 35.
Yeah, the economy in 1935 was maybe the worst economy in the history of the country.
Go back to 1920. Go back to the Roaring Twenties.
Okay. Yes, there was no such. Yes. So, but now you're going back to a time of such a more primitive economy. I mean, there's no such thing as retirement.
Well, you said 1935. I'm telling you. Prior to Social Security. I mean, it's. I don't know what you mean by primitive,
right.
but okay, we can also look at data today, and we know that at the very least, 15 to 20% of our elderly would be living in poverty without Social Security now, and we have yet to see the implications of this massive failure of 401ks, because the 401k system has been a complete disaster, and you've got something like 40 to 50%. A completely voluntary process. So we have 40 to 50% of people entering into retirement without any retirement savings whatsoever. Not a dollar. And they're entering society.
I agree with you on the 401k thing. And I also, I do think that that's not just a free market problem. I mean, the government, like we have a whole tax system basically designed to force you to invest in Wall Street for your retirement, which I think is just nutty.
You can put your 401k in other things. You can keep it in a bank account if you want. I mean, you can put it wherever you want. Real estate, you can't live there, but you could.
Okay, but certainly, like, say, investing in your local neighborhood or in, like, some local business is not nearly as easy as it is to just put your retirement, like, in a 401k
Well, that's not just taxes. It's because business is hard. I mean, that people can start a business if they want. I would advise it against that as a way of protecting your retirement pension. But. Listen, the bottom line is that, like, what do you do? What do you do if there's no Social Security?
Can I address just something else that you said there before? Because I think when you talk about, like, Social Security working because of what it's doing for the people who receive the checks, I do kind of feel like that's only looking at one side of an issue. I mean, look, truthfully, right now, and this is, I don't quite understand how liberals don't have more of a problem with if you're talking about young people paying into a system that pays old people's retirement, you have a transfer program from a poorer group to a richer group. That's what you have there. You can talk about what seniors would have been in poverty if they weren't getting that money, but young people are less wealthy than the old people receiving them as a group.
I mean, I think that's probably the case, because by the end of your life, hopefully you've been able to accrue some money. But that's the way that system works. I mean,
but I'm questioning whether it should work that way. Look,
I mean, are you questioning it on moral grounds, or are you questioning it on efficiency? Like, tell me a better system, because I'm certainly open to a better social insurance system that does not necessarily transfer money from present workers to retired workers. If you can come up with it that works, I'm all ears.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, look, I think if you look at the past, right, like, obviously when you go to the past, things get more primitive, and I'm not saying, like, I want all the modern technology.
1930 wasn't
America,
that primitive.
Pre-
1930 wasn't that primitive. You could actually watch films of it. Come on, Dave.
So before, say, like, the 60s, right, you had drastically less federal intervention in medical care in general, right? So there was no Medicare.
I'm sorry? No Medicaid.
Yeah, so drastically less. I don't know for sure that there was none, but much less involved. I think there were still some regulations and stuff like that. But so you had, countries in Europe that always had government, models. Germany, I think, had universal healthcare for a long time. Lots of other countries. I mean, America's healthcare was out competing theirs at the time. I think if we had kept a free market in place.
Where's the data for that?
What do you mean out competing? What does that mean?
Well, I believe at the time we had I don't know exactly how you measure it, but we were by far the wealthiest country. I believe you were probably better off getting medical service here.
Dave, hold on for a second.
This conversation is just taking turns that I wasn't sure it was going to take.
Well, no, that's fine.
But
just at least define the term. I mean, out competing. Do you mean that more people had access to health care than before Medicaid and Medicare?
Would you agree that America, say, like, in the 50s versus the more, like, kind of socialist countries in Europe, do you think we had, like, a stronger economy, like the average, like, salary or the amount of wealth that we had in the country?
I mean, a lot of those countries in Europe in the early 50s were dealing with a pretty big trauma that they were recovering from.
Okay, yes, I do remember there were a couple big traumas over there. Yes, you're right. I know governments were starting wars and killing a lot of people in Europe. I'm trying to, you know, just come up with an example, but I do think that America for a long time was probably the best experiment in free markets. Not far from perfect, but probably the best experiment.
You know what the income tax rate was at that time, right? The top margin.
No, I know the income tax. I know the income tax rate was a lot higher at that time. But
give me a sense. Give me a sense of how much.
You know, dodge that as they still do up at the top. When top rates are really, really high like that, I think it can be a little misleading sometimes. But yes, I know income tax was very high. But at the same time, we also didn't have, you know, we didn't have a fiat currency. We didn't have a government spending as much money. So there's also a lot of.
Hold on for one second. Hold on one second, because I want to get to that fiat currency thing in a moment, because it occurs to me now that if you are a sort of a von Mises person, that you may have an issue with our fiat currency. But let's just talk about those top marginal tax rates, because I love an excuse to remind people what they were. For every dollar that you made over $400,000, maybe it was $450,000, I mean, it depends. It fluctuated slightly. The top marginal tax rate was over 90%. Now, in today's dollars, 400,000, I think, is a couple of million. Top tax rate, 90%. So 90 cents of every dollar that you make over a couple of million dollars, income tax taxed at an, you know, 90 cents of that goes to the government. Now, remember, this is the era of the most free market that you were talking about, but they have that big moral issue of the thing. And I would also add that within the 40s and 50s, you had all of this incredible investment as a function in our infrastructure, as a function, in some cases, you know, the federal highway system was, you know, perhaps a, you know, at least it sold in somewhat as a mechanism to make sure that we could deal with we could have a greater war capacity, but it was also ostensibly to develop our economy. But you had all this New Deal investment. You had all the investment that came from expansion of our capacity, our factories' capacity, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, so I'm not sure what you mean.
Okay,
by
I get the picture you're painting. Let me kind of give you my view of it, which I think is drastically different. And I understand the point of it being like, yes, income taxes were very, very high in the 50s and 60s. I think, what was it, Kennedy was the one who brought them down, right?
To 75%. 75% was the top marginal tax rate under Kennedy.
Right, and he was higher before him, right? It was 90, and then he brought it down or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he brought it down 15%.
Okay. So fair enough. And then I guess what? Anyway, so I'm not denying that. Yes, that's very true. Here's some other points. This is kind of how I look at the bigger picture. From say the end of the Civil War to the beginning of the First World War in America, I would say it's probably the largest experiment in free markets at that time in the history of man. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect. Lots of people were excluded from the free market. We fucked up in a lot of ways. I'm sorry. I don't know if I'm not supposed to curse.
That's all right. We can always deal with that. Okay, no. The part about the success from Reconstruction to the First World War was the part that I actually almost spit my coffee up.
Wait, the Reconstruction to the end of the Civil War?
I mean, to the First World War.
No. Oh, okay. So I'm saying, yes, so Reconstruction to the First World War. I'm just saying we did have a huge country with no income tax, no central bank, very, very small federal. I think spending is like the average was like maybe 3% of what the national income or whatever. So I do. I'm not saying it's a perfect time, but I'm saying it certainly was an experiment in very restrained small government, and it did produce the wealthiest country of all time. It was by 1913, even still with no income tax whatsoever. So if you want to take the point of like,
well, you know, there was taxation. You know there was taxation, right? I mean,
yes. But I'm just saying you were talking about the income tax, so I'm just sticking with that one point. The income tax there was at zero, okay, and there was certainly far less taxation than later. I'm just saying at that point we had people all over the world jumping on boats trying to get to this country just for the freedom. I mean, I don't know. Sure, we can pick some points and say where things went wrong, but the big picture to me is that free markets worked really, really well.
So you want to take us back to the late 1800s?
No, come on. That's such a false narrative. Look, dude, I don't want to take us back a few hundred years. I want to have free markets in 2015.
But so you don't think like robber barons were in? You don't think that the land grants from the government?
No,
you
think I
this
think
is all free market.
Problem. I'm not saying it's like a utopia where there's no problem. But look, this is what happened. Okay, I just want to continue with this thing about like my view of the history compared to yours. So then you have right after that you have the big progressive era in the teens. We get an income tax, a central bank. We're in a world war a few years later. Then we're in another world war. And then yes, you're right. The government kind of keeps expanding ever since then. I just don't look. Would we have problems with robber barons? Sure. We just lost 40% of the wealth in this nation because they bailed out these rich people. I know a lot of it's coming back, but it's going disproportionately to rich people. So yes, there would be people robbing without government. We'd have to find a way to deal with that. But I think the problem's much worse with a forceful monopoly.
All right. So let's get to. I mean, I don't think the experiment went very well in the 1800s. I think otherwise you wouldn't have had things like the progressive era. You wouldn't have had things like
just because something happens doesn't mean it was right or necessary. I mean, things happen. You know, I mean, I'm not saying the system was perfect, and I'm sure a lot of the flaws are what led to these things coming over. So I don't disagree with that.
Okay. I mean, you want to. If there's principles of the Gilded Age, I guess that move you. I don't, you know, we had child labor at that time. You know that, right? The free market.
I'm well aware.
You don't have a problem with.
There was also child labor in every time before that. You know, to me, what ended child labor was the wealth. I'm not denying that the government didn't clean up the last little bit of it, but I'm saying like what ended child labor was free markets and wealth to me. Or forget the free market, but just the wealth effect. You know, you go back 200 years, people would have laughed at you if you had said we should end child labor. They would have said the kids will starve.
Right. All right. Well, I mean, the actual thing was, I mean, I will agree that I think that it's quite possible that the changes in our economy made it possible for the legislation to pass. I mean, I'll agree with that to a certain extent, because that's just the way that legislation gets passed. When you have a, you know, such a massive wealth disparity led up to the 1920s, then you're going to have it. It's going to impact our government, obviously, because the big industrialists don't want to lose and agrarian folk don't necessarily want to lose a huge portion of their cheaper labor. But
okay, can I ask you this? So,
sure.
Because I kind of feel so. If you're taking more, because I know you're not like a socialist, like the government should own means of production or anything like that. So is your take more or less like you kind of like the regulated free market? So you have to have this free market, but the government has to kind of regulate its excesses.
Well, I don't even believe in a free market. There's no such thing as a free market. There's no such thing as
okay.
a free market. It doesn't exist. I mean, you could there's simply no such thing. The government
okay,
is involved.
You conceded earlier that the government is based off forcefully taking your money. So just comparing the fact that, say, like, you know, the businesses that I can open that have to go compete with each other versus the government forcefully taking, whatever you want to call those businesses, you believe in some type of a marketplace.
Oh, sure. I believe in a well-regulated market. I believe that government can handle some functions much, much better than private industry. Health insurance
okay,
is one of those.
Now, how do you – so this is almost like what I find a little strange, that I find it's like this thing kind of like if trying to find the best way to put this, but like say we were talking about the mafia or something like that. I mean, you conceded kind of the mass murder, mass imprisonment. It's this horrible institution in this part. But the same people, the same legislators who are running things, you like what they do over here. So it's almost like you're trying to sell me like that the mafia runs a really great daycare when they're not murdering children down the block, which right away is just hard for me to kind of wrap my head around. But so when you see this government...
Well, I think
the reason
why you're having a tough time wrapping your head around it is because Tony Soprano is not going and whacking a guy and then going into a classroom of three-year-olds. The government is not an individual. The government is an institution.
I'm not good at analogies.
The government is an institution. I mean, look, do you think there are bad comedians out there?
Yes.
Okay.
Like bad as in like not funny?
Yeah. But,
sure.
But that doesn't mean that comedy is bad.
Right. But if I told you a comedian was a murderer... And
right.
Then, you were
I
like,
would not have
like, well,
that comedian. That's
horrible.
Exactly my point.
Then, like a horrible
listen,
person.
So
and
you,
like,
you've
no,
got to be a huge Bernie
too.
Sanders fan,
I might not
right?
care about that.
Well, I mean, so how do you have a problem with Bernie Sanders? I would imagine because he doesn't like he doesn't want the military. He wants to cut the military as well, but wants to push these social programs. You have a problem with the social programs, too, right? I mean, that's what I'm understanding.
Yes, yes. No, I don't think I've minced my words on that at all. I have a problem with the whole institution of government. I commend Bernie Sanders for that stuff on the foreign policy. I think he's really good with that. I like that he was he worked with Ron Paul on auditing the Fed and stuff like that. I think he's got some... He's
based on your logic,
Dave, Hillary Clinton.
Based on your logic, the fact that the government... wages war now, the war that you and I don't like, and allocates its money in ways that you and I don't like. We agree with some of that, others we don't. I mean, the fact of the matter is there was a government in the Gilded Age as well. There was a government in the late 1800s. You don't seem to think that government is bad or was necessarily, was government bad then too? I mean, I don't understand.
Of course. Okay, there was lots of horrible things that happened. Right. Look, I think that the more you go back in human history, if you want to go back that far, by modern moral standards, every government's very bad.
Right.
I mean, all of human history was based on conquest up until basically the Enlightenment. I shouldn't say that everywhere. But there was, there's like an Enlightenment, and then we got a little bit better, and then we get, it's horrible.
So
all
wait a second.
Human
so, all right. So you don't think there should be any government whatsoever? Because you're telling me that I cannot appreciate and promote certain government functions because of the government functions that they do in terms of war. So are you basically suggesting
no
government?
I would be, maybe the better way for me to put that is I would certainly at least be skeptical of the person who you think should be strung up on war crimes being the guy who's running your healthcare system.
I definitely am.
Fair enough. So maybe that's a better way to put what I'm saying. But no, look, again, I just, because the word government, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page with what I'm saying. I don't, there's anything the government does that you want it to do, it's not that I'm saying that can't be done. I don't think it should be done with a forceful monopoly. So I know you're saying
but
that makes it
no
not a government.
There's no other way
whatever.
For a government to function, and there's never been a way for a government to function but for a forceful monopoly. I mean, all right, let's go to private property then, okay? Because if we're going to get into this whole thing about why should the government send out a policeman to come and stop me from taking your bicycle?
Well, it's not so much a matter that my position isn't that the government should send out a policeman to do. Or is your question why shouldn't they or should they?
No, but why do you allow for the fact? Why can't I take your bicycle?
I believe in private property. I think that kind of is rooted in self ownership in a sense, right? So
what?
You own yourself. You own the fruits of your labor. All that. Kind of lock
you didn't
stuff.
Make that bike.
Let me just say
you bought
question.
That bike so, with money that has value because of taxes.
Hold on, I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
You didn't make that bike. You bought it with money that has value in this country because of taxes.
Okay, but if the money has value because of taxes?
Yes.
I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Oh, no,
I
that
mean,
is
money,
necessarily
money
true. There's one reason. Listen, Dave, there's one reason why I will accept your U.S. dollar to buy it because I can pay my taxes in it, and I have to pay my taxes. That's the way the system works, bud.
Okay, no, I'm not. That certainly adds a lot of value to the money, right?
No, it adds a lot.
Currency also. Look, we used to be on a gold standard, and currency just represented gold that was being held in banks.
That was a disaster.
There were competing currencies before we had a central bank.
That was a disaster. The gold standard, and let's get back to the fiat currency. Gold standard is a disaster. There's not enough gold in the world to support our economy now. The reason why we had such a horrible depression.
That's not you're the gold standard. All right, look, we're jumping on so many issues. I really wanted to get to the thing before. But look, can I get back to the private property and the police thing?
Yes.
I just really wanted to answer that.
Okay.
Okay, so I just wanted to say that I 100% think, right, so I do believe in private. The money coming from government, almost aside, I don't think the money should come from government. So I think money should just be like a store of value, the way it has been developed in different markets to some degree. I think now that we have technology, we could do a lot better. But with the policeman thing, I think absolutely. I think you have a right to defend yourself. Anyone else has, and you have a right to kind of like outsource that right to someone else to defend you. I think me or you have the right to stop someone from stealing from someone else if we see it happening.
All right. So I fortunately have had this massive success with this podcast. I have gone out and I have purchased a tactical team of paramilitary. We have big guns. We're going to take your bike. And don't call that entity that has the monopoly of force, because that's immoral for them to impose their monopoly of force upon me. This is the way. I got the money. I got the power. I got the guys with the guns. Freedom, baby. I want that bike.
Okay, so, right, like the idea that that's kind of like, I think, the vacuum argument, more or less, right? Like, if the government's gone, someone else can kind of build up the power and come in.
Well, of
and
course. I mean, you can watch it on Game of Thrones.
I mean, I don't watch the show, but I think I kind of got the reference.
Okay.
Look, I think that that is a big issue. Look, the idea of, like, a private initiation of force is every bit as bad as government initiation of force, in my concern. Like, there's private criminals, private rapists, all that. I do think that would be a big issue, and that's, like, the biggest challenge of anarchism, to kind of work out how we still defend ourselves, how we still make sure no other government comes up. But look, if you're talking about, kind of, like, our criminal justice system could not be, I shouldn't say it couldn't be worse, but it's pretty disastrous. I mean, we imprison more of our people than any other country in the world.
Agreed.
We have a, I'm sorry?
Agreed.
Right, so I'm just saying, like, you paint, it's like, as compared to what? As compared to having one centralized monopoly with all the weapons in the world, do you think there's any chance that the world could be this weaponized if it wasn't for the American government? I mean, if it wasn't for the ability that you're willing to kind of give to this group. Now, I understand it went in a corrupt direction that you don't want it to go in with the military, but once you give this government the ability to do that, I mean, we've armed the entire world more than any other force in the history of the world, so I just don't see the government as solving this problem.
You do realize that it's private manufacturers of weapons that have done this. I mean,
through government funding, there's no way that would have been supported.
Well, they sell it to other countries.
Complex.
They sell it to other countries.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that again. So private companies selling to other countries?
Yes.
Okay, yes, but those are still companies, right? I mean, again, these are companies that were kind of built up by American taxpayer money, and now they're selling to other foreign governments. Okay, fine. Look, maybe someone could still do that without the government funding in the free market. But how about just what our military is giving to all these other countries? I mean, how about just the weaponry that the government sends to all these people?
Wait a second. Wait, government factories making a tank. There's no government factories making
fighter jet. I'm pretty sure the government, like in World War II, came in and converted factories that were not making tanks into making tanks.
Well, that's true.
So it's not that there's no government, influence in that. When the government wasn't at war, it's not like they were just sitting there like, hey, instead of making cars that people want to buy, let's just build tanks so we can take over the world.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's much more,
not have had America get involved in World War II? I mean, I don't want to get into an argument about it. I'm just curious.
Well, look, I mean, I am a Jewish grandson of a Holocaust survivor, so I certainly am no fan of, like, some of the regimes that we were fighting in World War II.
My take
on it, honestly, is that we never should have been in World War I. The Treaty of Versailles was a disaster, and that's what caused it was kind of inevitable at that point that something had to happen. But look, the winners of wars write history books.
Wait a second. This is a simple question, buddy. Listen,
let me just say this one thing. The winners of wars write history books. We partnered up with a guy in Stalin that killed way more people than Hitler did and then gave him half of Europe. And then that also led to a guy now who killed more people than all of them. So it's not just this easy piece of cake. Obviously, we should have fought that war. We did a great job.
All right, well, look, I'm not saying anything is easy or a piece of cake. I'm just curious as to what your opinion was. And it sounds like you would have entered that war. And if you're going to enter that war, I mean, how are you going to do it? Right? I mean, I mean, if you're going to enter that war, I personally think that, we committed war atrocities in dropping those weapons in Japan.
Absolutely, we did. We nuked cities.
Yes.
We sit here and morally, we sit on our high horse about the possibility that Iran could maybe have a nuclear weapon. We're the only ones who have ever used them. And that's nothing compared to what we did to, like, Tokyo and Berlin. And, we targeted citizens.
Yeah, I mean, you and I agree on this stuff. The fact is, though, is that, and yes, in Dresden as well, the fact is that, you know, I think we both would have gone entered that war, and perhaps there was a way, I certainly think there was a way to do some things more humanely, but at the end of the day, if you're going to enter into that war, you're going to marshal all the resources you can to win, I think. And so, you know, I think we're probably in the same place there, I think. But let's. I want to get back on track. We just have a little bit more time because we've gone a little bit longer than we generally do. But this has been.
It's the chemistry we got, Sam. We can't fight it.
Indeed. let's talk a little bit about this fiat currency. You're aware, right, that when a currency is tied to a fixed asset, a finite asset, and it could be gold, mm-hmm. it could be
sure.
I don't know, flowers. It doesn't matter. I mean, tulips.
Right. Isn't that what it started as, right? In like Ireland or something like that?
Well,
I think
tulips
used, like, rose
in
petals?
Denmark, I think it was. Or,
okay.
Or
okay.
Holland, I think it was. And tulips in Holland. But all right, let's assume, you know, the problem that we had when we were on the gold standard, and the reason why we got off the gold standard, and the reason why countries get off the gold standard when they have to fight a war, is because it limits the ability of your economy to expand. A, and B, it also limits the ability of a country to respond to the sort of the business cycle, and why you had much more severe recessions and depressions when
okay.
we were on the gold standard. And because you...
Okay, so to me, the oh, and by the way, I don't know that we're actually off the gold standard. I believe the window has been temporarily closed, is what Richard Nixon said.
Well, that's right.
So
yeah, I guess
it's been since 72.
We're on the same type of sabbatical I am from law school. Let's put it that way.
Well, so, look, to me, with the Bretton Woods Agreement after World War II, you know, we made an agreement to the world that they would peg their currency to us and we would honor it at $35 an ounce. And then we cheated like crazy in the 50s and 60s, printed way more money than we had gold to back it up. Our foreign investors were on to us, and they came in to collect what they kind of had coming to them, and we said no and gave them the middle finger. I mean, I know I've heard you say before on your programs when we were talking about, like, default, that America's never defaulted in its history. But to me, that's a pretty big default. Like that's we defaulted on that right there. And to me, look, I want to address the question of a growing economy too, because yes, you're right, it does limit how fast an economy can grow, but that's also why we built up such a huge bubble, you know, afterward. It also limits how much, like, of an unsustainable boom you can have that always leads to a bust. The problem with fiat currency to me is, like, look, when we talk about the bailouts and people talk about TARP or the SEV, that's nothing. The Federal Reserve put, what was it? I mean, you know this stuff. What was it, $15 trillion into the economy after the crash in 2007, 2008? I mean, a big, big, big part of the reason why there's this huge inequality growing in America that liberals seem very concerned with is because of our monetary policy. Now, we just flood money into these financial institutions. I mean, they have no more, you know, that's their game now. It's just literally taking money from the Fed
I certainly would have preferred that money going directly to homeowners and to the banks. There's no doubt about that.
But don't you acknowledge that isn't just, it didn't just happen to go that way. It's like the Goldman Sachs owns this government. Like, the one who you want to be the referee is owned by the guys who you want them to referee.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely see that as a problem. I definitely see that as a problem. But that doesn't mean that I don't want there to be a government.
There's nothing worse than when, like, I throw something out, like, real passionately, and you just go, no, that's, I agree.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
All right.
I mean, listen, there's only one or two choices here. It's either you fight back through regulation, through politics, to decrease the power that the owners and capital has over our government, or you get rid of government and just give all the power to those bad actors who are using the government to achieve what they want. Those are the two options.
The government is an additional source of power. So you would just be taking away one more source of power.
No, they're a vessel. They're a vessel.
The stuff that Bernie Sanders is running on, the idea of breaking up the big banks, the free market would have broke up these big banks a long time ago. I mean, these banks would never exist if they didn't have all this government support.
Well, no, these banks wouldn't have existed if they hadn't been deregulated and allowed to get that big.
Okay, look, I think we both know this to be a fact. When it comes to the, like, deregulation, overregulation argument, and I know your argument is deregulation led to the crash of 07, 08, which is a lot of people make that argument. Look, the lobbyists who represent these big financial institutions, they, and I know you know this, I've heard you say this on your show before, they will lobby for regulation or against regulation wherever it helps them. So if one regulation helps them, they'll lobby for that. If getting rid of it helps them, they'll lobby for that. I'm not saying that they don't do that at every turn. They don't try to get rid of these things, like whatever Glass-Steagall or the stuff they got rid of under Clinton. I'm not saying they don't want to do these things for, obviously, like, their own benefit. But The system that we have in place is a centralized bank with a chairman appointed by the president who can extend trillions of dollars into these private banks whenever they want to. They're then bailed out by the banks. They're incredibly regulated. I mean, that you have to acknowledge it's still one of the most regulated fields in the economy. So to just say it's like, oh, it's this deregulated free market system, I mean, it's not any free market system that I would want to be a part of.
Well, I mean, look, I suppose you could have no FDIC as well, and then, you know, you would have genuine suffering from people. But, you know, for me, these aren't...
Maybe, okay, but maybe, but we have suffering from people too. Look, but there's also a big problem. One of the big problems with the FDIC is that it takes away what one of the only things Americans are still really good at, which is consumer research. Like, we actually are the best shoppers still in the world, and we check out, you know, like Yelp and reviews, and now people just have no worry about putting their money in these crazy financial institutions, because it's all just like, ah, it's government money, you're going to get it back. I'm not saying, look, a little bit of suffering of like one crazy bank making bad banks and then losing their people's money, it's kind of hard to say. I'm not saying I want those people to suffer, but sometimes one bank doing that will make all the other banks go, okay, we can't risk these crazy assets,
well,
you know, these crazy gambles.
I mean, I don't know that that's, I mean, you know, there was a reason why we instituted the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and it was because we learned the lesson that not having it was a greater disaster. You know,
The reason it's in, okay, I get what you're saying, where, like, we have these policies because we learned a lesson or something like
right.
that. But if you go back, the reason we have these policies is because lobbyists in the banking industry lobbied for them.
No, I don't think that's the case. I mean,
have you ever met all the president's bankers?
Yes, I interviewed
them. It was a great book. I'm just saying, the industry, when regulation comes over an industry, you can almost, I'm not saying always or whatever, but the vast majority of the time, you can go historically to the record book and find the lobbyists in that industry who were lobbying for it.
Of course, there's lobbyists on both sides of every decision. I get it. There's lobbyists on both sides of every decision. But just because there's lobbyists on both sides of every decision doesn't mean that
both... making the point. Here's the point I'm trying to make, and maybe not making it that well. I'm just saying, when you give the government kind of the benefit of the doubt, like, they're doing this because they learned this lesson. It's kind of like when there's, like, a pot law,
but
and
dude,
people go like,
why do you
oh,
keep referring to the government
bad
as
you?
If it's this entity that has nothing to do with the body politic? I mean, do you really perceive... Yeah, I mean, you refer to the government as if it has nothing to do with the facts on the ground at all. Like,
I
you don't
understand.
Think that there
so,
was, you don't, I
what
mean,
do you mean,
when I say we learned about what happens when you don't have any federal insurance for banks, it's not that there was a bureaucrat who said, hey, you know, we should do this because I'm getting lobbied. It's because there were literally millions of people who were immediately destitute.
Yes. No, look, I know that the Great Depression was a disaster, and it's not a surprise to me that after creating a Federal Reserve, fighting a world war, having the Roaring Twenties, building up this boom, that we had a disaster. I'm not denying that. But I'm just saying that there's big problems with the government coming in this way. So I'm not, you know.
All right. Well, listen, I think we've hit our limit for the day, but I will let you... have a summation. But before I do, let me just say this. I want you to Google, let's see, recessions, deflation, gold standard, and take a look at some of the charts. It give you a sense of just how deep the recessions were, how painful. And understand that when you see those red lines or going below or however that chart shows up, when you see those negative numbers, understand that associated with those numbers is real human misery, so that you can contextualize, and you will see that since we basically went off of the gold standard, we have more ability. And I don't always like the decisions of what the Fed does, and I'd like to see more transparency. But we have more ability to deal with recessions, both from a fiscal side and a monetary policy side. But let me do
okay.
O'Reilly and say you got the last word.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Let me just say, first of all, just out of the context of this debate, that I really appreciate you bringing me on. And I do, I like I said to you off air, I really do love the show. And one of my biggest criticisms of kind of the modern like liberal people that I talk to is that their criticism of like libertarianism is like, are you serious? That's so offensive.
Well,
and
that's
just like walk away. Like
that's the subtext of what I'm saying.
Like debate, and I really admire that you embrace debate and like to go like kind of chapter and verse. So
I appreciate that. It is the subtext of what I'm saying. But go ahead.
My final point is you talk about the human misery, and that you look at these numbers on Oblivion, that's not just numbers, that is real human misery. I agree with you, and I know we agree on the war issue, but man, if you want to talk about the human misery that this government is inflicting, the idea, I know you're saying you don't like that the government does that stuff, but I don't know, man, the idea that we're going to have a government that spends $3.5 trillion, it's going to, this humongous country of 320 million people, we're going to... I don't see how it's not going to turn militaristic and bad. Maybe look for an example of where there's been a government this big, had this much control, where it didn't go terrible. I think we would have, look, in the 20th century, we had two major world wars, 250 million people killed by their own governments. We now, in the 21st century, we've already had a huge ramp up in our military industrial complex. We imprison more people in the rest of the world. The amount of human misery that the government is causing, I think, is far greater than what any free market would cause.
All right. Let me just say one quick tiny thing.
With the last word.
Yeah, and then you get another one. that is, I can't help myself. That is that, you know, to me, your argument that because our government does bad things, which we both agree are bad, that they cannot do good things, is like, to me, saying that because people do bad things, people can't do good things.
I don't know. I mean, it's not to say that the government can't ever do anything good. I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying nothing good's ever been done by the government or no one's ever done anything good with a check they got from the government. I mean, that's not my position at all. My position is that if there is an organization that's controlled by a group of people that, hey, let's say just for, and I'll keep this very brief, but let's say we had our drone policy here in America and we treated first world like white people the way we treat these people in the Middle East. Let's say in Chicago, there were like two suspected criminals in a school, and the police department went, we're going to drone bomb the school and blow them up. Like, the group of people who run that organization, that make that decision, are the same group of people. I'm just saying, if from my perspective, these people are like war criminals who should be strung up on charges and thrown in jail. So I don't see that, at least would be a reason to be skeptical of them having these kind of do-gooder impulses that I feel like you kind of need them to have to run these benevolent social programs.
Well, you know those guys, they don't run the Social Security Administration, right? You know the drone operators don't go across the hall.
No. I'm saying the people, no, I know, dude. I'm saying the people who write the rules, write all those rules. So the Congress, the executive, like those are the same people who are giving the authority to those drone operators, are giving the authority to like the Medicare, you know, whatever expansion.
Yeah, but they also take a poop like you and I do too, and that doesn't necessarily. I mean, I just think that I can separate the wheat from the chaff, as it were, and mm-hmm. even if the chaff. Okay, but I meant to give you the last word, so...
The last word. I really hope I just inspire something that you have to get one more word out now. I don't even know. look, man, you did certainly inspire me to read more on the entitlement stuff that you were making, the argument that you were making about the unfunded liabilities, so I really appreciate that. And,
We'll do it again.
I'm done.
We'll do it again. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Have a good one.
Folks, the podcast is Part of the Problem. We'll put a link to it at majority.fm. Dave, again, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Sam.
Bye. Dave Smith, everybody. All right. I'm vowing that we are going to keep it under we're going to go into the fun half and keep it tight. Vowing is a vow. That was fun.
It was good, yeah.
He's on a journey. I think he's going to get there.
Yeah. Much more productive than, say, a Walter Block debate. And maybe not as fun, but much more productive.
Walter Block took it out to... I mean, remember, his property argument was, my court will meet your court in a third court.
Ah.
All right, take a quick break. come back, read your IMs, maybe take a phone call. I'm not going to promise anything, folks, because we don't have that much time. If everything goes all right, I'll tell you the story of why I have to rush home. But if it doesn't, I'm going to be too depressed about it. It's just another stupid story I have. There's something that I have, like, a problem with babysitters. All right. We'll be right back after this.